Hello, and welcome to On the Line. I'm Carl Richter. Today's conversation is with Texarkana, Arkansas City Manager Jay Ellington. We spoke about his career, what he's learned about Texarkana in his short time on the job, and his goals for the city. First, here's a look at some of the stories we covered this week in the Texarkana Gazette. Bowie County healthcare officials raised an alarm about a recent spike in COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations. The Joint Emergency Operations Center said available resources to care for COVID patients are critically low and urged residents to get vaccinated. As of July 19th, only about 29% of county residents over age 12 had been fully vaccinated. Local health authority Dr. Matt Young said the Delta variant of the coronavirus is moving quickly through the area and affecting younger populations more acutely. Texas Side Police have made 3 arrests in the death of an infant. 10-month-old Javonte Neely was brought not breathing to a local hospital July 11th, according to police reports. The baby was bruised and had broken ribs and a bleeding brain. He died of his injuries. The boy's stepfather, Joshua Deshaun Neely, faces capital murder and other charges in the case, and if convicted, could be sentenced to death. He initially told police he had dropped the child. TTPD detectives allege that Javonte's mother, Christy Wedgeworth, knew about Neely's abuse of the baby and of her 4-year-old daughter, but did nothing to stop it. Wedgeworth allegedly told police she had seen Lowe strike Javonte in the face while wearing boxing gloves on 10 different occasions. She faces 2 child injury charges. Lennon Davis, a man who lived with the couple, allegedly struck the 4-year-old several times with an object, leaving bruises on much of her body. He also has been charged with injuring a child. Neely's bond has been set at $7.6 million. Wedgeworth's at $1 million, and Davis's at $10,000. The Texarkana, Texas ISD Board approved pay raises for district employees in the coming school year. The plan includes teacher step increases in salary and a 3% bonus for all other professional, paraprofessional, and auxiliary employees who receive a satisfactory performance rating. Deputy Superintendent Autumn Thomas praised staff for striving for excellence last school year as they were faced with the challenges of the COVID pandemic. After a break, this week's interview. Subscribe today to the Texarkana Gazette and you'll get an Apple iPad to use at no charge, plus a Sunday paper delivered to your home. Every day you'll get an electronic version of the Gazette downloaded directly to your iPad. It's the ultimate home delivery. No more waiting, wet papers, or going out into the cold. And everything you want, the latest news, puzzles, and coupons, is right there. You can zoom in to make articles easier to read, or have the iPad read them to you aloud. Enjoy full-color photo galleries and embedded video content, and access the Gazette's archives back to 2002. For only $29.99 a month, it's a great deal. Call 870-648-1209. That's 870-648-1209 to subscribe to the Texarkana Gazette today. When you talk with Arkansas side city manager Jay Ellington, one word keeps coming up: community. He's very clear about what community means to him and what he can do to foster it as the city's chief executive. Ellington is new to Texarkana. He began his work here June 1st, 2 months after the unexpected resignation of former city manager Kenny Haskin. As you'll hear, he brings decades of experience in city government to the job. He also told me about what he sees in Texarkana and his three-point plan to make it better. Here's my conversation with Texarkana, Arkansas city manager Jay Ellington. Welcome to the studio. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here this morning.
I want to get to some city business, but first I want to let people get to know you a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about your life and background?
Sure. Carl, I'm a lifelong or career-long public servant. Worked in government, local governments around the country. In my relationship to Texarkana, Arkansas, I'm a native of North Louisiana, born in Rayville, Louisiana, east of Monroe, and went to Louisiana Tech in Ruston. Got a bachelor's degree there, and later in my career, I got a master's in business from Centenary College in Shreveport. I've worked in a number of communities, both in Louisiana and out of state. In Louisiana, I worked right out of college for the city of Bastrop, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. I went from there down to South Louisiana and worked for Terrebonne Parish, Houma Terrebonne. Mm-hmm. From there, I came back to Shreveport and spent 10 years as a director of Parks and Recreation in Shreveport. While I was in Shreveport, I got my master's degree in business and had a call from one of my friends out on the West Coast, and he said, "I got something I might want you to do for me." And I said, "Well, what's that?" He said, "Well, I've got some big park system out here. I'd like to see you come look at it and see if you can help us with it." So, of course, I was nice and fresh out of that business degree and anxious to do some unique things. And so this was an opportunity that I couldn't pass up. So I went to San Bernardino County, California. Mm-hmm. It's actually the largest landmass county in the continental United States anyway.
Wow.
Has about 1.5 million people in it. I think I had 17 incorporated communities there and spent a lot of time working with those entities and multiple entities to mm-hmm. accomplish a lot of tasks. So a lot of good experiences. One of the ones I like to tell folks about is the business kind of related stuff that government doesn't always get into. But my county manager came to me one day and he said, "Jay, I'd like for you to take our park system from 80% self-sufficient to 100% self-sufficient."
Wow.
And I said, "Well, sir, how long are you going to give me to do that?" And he said, "Well, about 18 months. And I said, "Okay, sir, let me think about it, and I'll get back in a couple of days." And I went back a couple of days later, and I said, "Well, I need to ask you a couple of favors before I commit to this." And I said, "You know, our local government has a lot of cumbersome things, a lot of checks and balances." And I said, "I need to get out of a couple of our systems." I said, "In order for me to perform some business-like services inside government, I've got to do some kind of unique things." With that, I asked him to let me out of the personnel system mm-hmm. and the purchasing system. So I immediately went to a just-in-time purchasing system. So we didn't have any warehousing anymore at any of these facilities. And so we changed our purchasing policies. We went and got stuff when we needed it. Mm-hmm. All that type stuff. And then in the personnel side, we changed our whole system. And I talked to it up like it is kind of like the Disneyland approach. meaning that most of the we had a lot of full-time people with a lot of benefits, and so we changed that whole system. So we laid off actually 38 people, full-time people, and of course took those salaries out and the benefits out of our system, and then we built back with part-time and seasonal people. So that's the reason I call it the Disneyland approach, because it is a lot of young folks, a lot of people that didn't need benefits, et cetera. So, but we actually took 38 positions out and put 50 actual working people back in the system. At a couple of $1 million savings. So it was kind of interesting process to go through. So I was able to use that that skill right out of the business school that I got to in local government there. From there, I came back to Louisiana for a while and then ended up in Northern Virginia running a park authority, which was a kind of a separate special district function in Prince William County, Virginia, right outside of D.C. in the D.C. metro region. And of course, there I was the administrator, so I had all of the administrative functions, accounting and risk management, and all the functions that we have to look out after for the betterment of the unit every day. So, along with that, we did a lot of planning. I put into effect a capital development process for that agency in which we passed our bond election at 72%, I believe. Think it was one of the highest they had ever had in the county. So that was an accomplishment in my career that I was proud of. And so as I worked through that, I said, well, I want to slow down a little bit. So I said, I want to take an opportunity out in the West. The reason I said the West, because my wife and I had taken a little tour out to the national parks in the West the year before, and I said, you know, if I ever get a chance, I might want to come back out here. So we looked around, and we found a city-county government in Butte, Silver Bow, Montana. And we went out to Butte for a couple of years, really enjoyed the mountains. And, of course, all my family, you know, they had to come see me out there because we were about halfway between Yellowstone and Glacier National Park. So,
that sounds,
you know,
amazing.
Everybody had to come see me. Yeah. So I felt like a tour guide there for a while, too. So, but I enjoyed being out west and doing some things in a city-county government, again, bringing those functions together and making that work for everybody. I went from there down to Corpus Christi, Texas, and I got to serve as both the director of Parks and Recreation there and as an interim assistant city manager for a couple of years. Then I was able to relocate back to Louisiana, so just kind of coming back home in this area. And I'd been back in Ruston for a couple of years when the opportunity in Texarkana came up. So. And my role in Ruston was administrative services director, so I was managing contracts, capital projects, and those things for the city of Ruston. So I had some pretty good experiences in my career. I say my Parks and Rec side probably gave me more work and more relationship with citizens than probably any of the other departments because we had so many special interest groups that wanted something from the park system. And so I've had everything from indoor swimming facilities to water parks to golf courses to shooting ranges to, you know, you can name the gambit of recreation services. I've probably had them somewhere in my career. And then, again, they all brought their own special interest groups and people who wanted services, you know, from the local government entity. So trying to work with a lot of individuals, bring as many people into the folds as I could and try to explain what we do, why we do it, and how we do it, and then trying to make sure they understand what resources we have to help them in the community and then what things we can't do as well, too. Right. Just communication, probably a key there.
You recently celebrated your 50th wedding anniversary.
I did. Right? How'd you find out? Did I tell you that?
I think so, yeah. Tell us about your family a little bit.
All right, so I got married in college. Been a great 50 years. It went by in a hurry for me. So I guess my moving around a little bit had a little bit to going by in a hurry. But but again, I've got three children. Mm-hmm. My oldest son's here, actually in Texarkana now.
Oh, wow.
And then my middle daughter, her husband, and two grandchildren are in Northern Virginia. They actually live in one of my second favorite places, and that's on the Shenandoah River in Northern Virginia.
Oh, wow.
And
now it's your turn to go visit, right?
That's right. I do go up visit them quite frequently. And then my youngest son and his wife and one child and one on the way live in Northern Virginia, also in the Leesburg area.
It's been, as we're recording this, about 6 weeks since you started.
That's correct.
What's it been like? What have you learned about Texarkana? Are there any priorities that you see now that maybe you had to learn about in these first initial stages?
So, and I'm still learning. Even yesterday I spent the whole afternoon with the police department doing some touring and talking about some of their services and learning the depth of their operations. Mm-hmm. But again, I've begun to learn a number of things about the community and began to formulate kind of three areas that I wanted to concentrate on for the first year or so here. And those have come to me from just various discussions with people. What I tried to do first was get out and get a good feel for the staff folks. Mm-hmm. And we've got a great group of people leading us in that area. And so I spent a lot of time individually with them and then collectively with them in a group as well. I then moved to our elected leaders and the board of directors and the mayor, spent some additional time with them talking about their wards and special interests that they may have, some things that they may want to see the city do into the future. And then I began to work my way out into the community at mm-hmm. that point in time. So I reached back to some of our previous elected leaders. I reached out to some of the county folks. I reached out to some of the nonprofit folks. I reached to the downtown folks. Mm-hmm. So I just began to reach out and try to bring people in just to let them know who I am. Just sit in my office and talk about interests that they have and anything they want to share with me. So gotten some good history stories out of that, as well as some good "I'd like to see you do this" story kind of too. So I've gotten some of all of that, and I'm continuing to do that. I've already had a couple opportunities to go out to a couple of the Rotary clubs in the community. So I've gotten out and talked a little bit about these three points I'll tell you about in a minute that I've come up with. But just getting to know people is really important to me. Mm-hmm. And the more they know me and feel comfortable with me, hopefully they'll feel comfortable with what we do in the local government side as well.
So you've anticipated my next question, which is sort of what the priorities are for the next 6 months to a year.
Well, I think my observations have kind of led me to these three directions. And at the top of that list is what I'm doing with you today, which is communication, trying to get out to the community with information, whether that be through the social media side, through our web pages, through newsletters, any of the media opportunities that we have. And a podcast is definitely one of those. And I thank you for having me today. Because the communication piece, if I look at information this way, if we don't tell people what we're doing, they will make it up themselves. So I'm just in the mode of trying to make sure they understand what we do, how we do it, and how often we may do it, so they have all the knowledge that they need in relationship to having a conversation about city services. We are rather limited in what our resources are. So we want you to understand that as well. and what we can and can't do in the community as well. So from the communication piece, I moved on to community maintenance.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
And community maintenance means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. To me, it means what level do we take care of our community? And that includes everything from how often we mow the grass at the parks, to whether we mow the grass on the corner at the boulevard, to how often the garbage gets emptied, wherever it is, how often limbs get picked up on the streets, mm-hmm. and how we just maintain our community. And my observations are we're a little bit below what I would call a normal.
Okay.
Okay. And so in that, I would like for us to try to strive to do a better job at community maintenance. And that gets down to even how many citations we've had to write for properties that are the grass may be too tall or the house may be dilapidated. Mm-hmm. I know you saw recently where we issued some teardown on a number of structures. And so we're going to continue that effort to keep us rolling on that side as well, too, clearing out some of the lots that we've had property on for years that mm-hmm. needed to come down and get off. So we're gonna be a little pretty diligent on that as well too. So that community maintenance piece is important to me because as we look at the community, if we set a standard for the public right of ways and parks, et cetera, and public buildings, then we can expect our citizens to set a standard by what we set our public standard at.
Right.
And if we do a good job on our own properties and manage properties, then I think our citizens will do a better job as well, too. So hopefully that'll make us all look good.
Right.
So that's the community maintenance piece. The last piece that I've kind of centered in on recently here is the planning piece for our community. Mm-hmm. It kind of goes the same way. So if you don't have plans in place, people will make up your plans for you.
Right.
Okay. So that being said, we have a 1988 comprehensive master plan for the city.
That's been a long time.
That's been a long time. I didn't count the years. I really don't want to know how long it's been, but too long for me. So high up on my list, and I met with the Planning Commission again last night, and they adopted a goal for next year to get the comprehensive master plan in funded and underway. So it's nice to see them. I told them what my observation was, and they went right to the goal for next year to try to get that tackled. So that was nice to have that support level to get that rolling. You know, and you have when you look at the whole community, you plan how transportation works, mm-hmm. where public facilities are, what types of public facilities you want to put in place, and then also where are the zones for various functions to take place, where are the commercial zones, where are the residential zones. That's what the comprehensive plan lays out for us. The Planning Commission jumped in freely to say, you know, we've had a lot of zoning changes over the years, and if we get the comp plan back in place where we need it, we won't have as many of those, and they're correct about that. So, but it takes lots of work. It takes lots of work on the staff part, on the Planning Commission's part, and on the citizens' part to step up. And when we open this up for some public input and to talk about your particular areas, your wards, or your subdivisions, please come forward with us. And you know, and because we need that input, because we're only going to be as good as what we all participate in.
Right. So I assume you'll be asking for that input as this.
Yes, process we will. So that process will come up with some norms and some things to put on the table. And then it will ask the citizens to come in and look at those, and then we'll make some decisions from those public meetings.
Okay. There was a sort of trio of things that happened before you got here that I'm sure you're still dealing with. The COVID pandemic, the cyber attack, and the winter storm in February. So what can you tell us, first of all, in terms of COVID relief? How much money is coming into the city. How do you plan to use it? And will you be seeking public input on that too?
Yeah, I'm sure we will. The public input process is a part of all of our opportunities. Mm-hmm. Okay. So anytime we're putting something up on an agenda to be voted on, we invite the public to comment on that, and we encourage them to come talk to us as well, whether it's something on the agenda or something they just want to present to us. The COVID piece does have some money coming from the federal government to us, and we are in the process on the staff side of making some several levels of opportunities for the mayor and board of directors to look at to see how they may want to spend that money. There are some specific recommendations from the funding source, from the feds, that expect us to stay inside certain guidelines.
Right. You can't just spend it on anything.
Right. We can't just spend it on anything. We can't just spend it on what we'd like to spend it on, more than likely.
Right.
We'll be trying to stay within those guidelines as best we can and then benefit the community with that money as far as we can.
As far as the cyber attack goes, what's your observation on how well the city has recovered from that and prevention efforts moving forward to hopefully this never happens again?
Right. I think in our last staff meeting we talked about where each of the agencies were, how much of their information they had either recovered or lost. And so I think we're probably somewhere in the 75% range of getting back to some normalcy. Mm-hmm. So we still have additional information that we're trying to rebuild. Mm-hmm. And then again, we had to kind of start our processes over, so we're still trying to get in the latest information back into the system as well, too. And so even my court systems yesterday had a report to me that they were up in the 90% range of getting all their stuff backloaded into the system. So, and our various departments were affected differently. Some of them had backed up more frequently, various functions. So it was easier for some of them to get back up in operation. But, of course, we went from being a modern-day agency to back to the pen and pencil days.
Right.
Pretty quick. And in several days there, we realized that we just didn't have the wherewithal to continue operating like we were. So it took us a while to get back to just putting data back into the system. But again, I think we're making a great deal of progress. We've learned a lot from this progress as well, too, and in respect of backup and keeping stuff current. Mm-hmm. That we can count on ourselves to take care of ourselves in the future.
Right.
Because these outside entities may come back at us at some point in time. So we never know when's that's going to happen.
Yeah.
The best that we have in that list.
The storm. What are the lingering effects? What are you still dealing with from those few days in February?
Well, we were fairly fortunate with our buildings, not like Miller County and the courthouse, but we're providing space where we can, helping the county in that role as well. So, generally we fared fairly good over that time period. I think it put everybody in stress. And so some equipment failures or some other things that have occurred since then, we even have plant materials that still may not be coming back or maybe just now starting to come back. So that just kind of looking around, hopefully the community will look a little better as we begin to come out of the deep freeze into a good growing season here. So, but generally, we had some contractors that helped in the streets and the roads and the other stuff. But overall, I think during that time period, we kept what we needed to keep open and were able to operate at a low level, but a reasonable level.
everyone's interested in downtown and what's happening here. What do you see as the future of downtown?
I think our downtown area has lots of good things happening with it. You know, the entertainment district concept is just one of those that we've had ours in place for a while, and looking, we're going to make some adjustments on our lines for the entertainment district that went through the Planning Commission last night. And the Texas side is putting entertainment district lines in place as well. I think that will help our restaurant and entertainment side. And so hopefully that will continue to grow. And we do have our opportunities continuing for residential. And hopefully got one major building underway. Hopefully that'll be finished later this year. And then we've got a couple others in the pipeline. So that the more people we're able to bring to downtown, the more we'll be more businesses we'll be able to bring back in relationship with that. You know, numbers drive so much. I think our the entertainment piece of downtown, festivals, outdoor events, will continue to grow as well, too, in the community.
With your experience in Parks and Rec, how do you see the city park system? Where is there room for improvement there?
Sure, and I think we've got a number of things going. We've done some trail improvements in recent years. We're a little bit over about 315 or 18 acres in the whole park system. That's the trails and the parks together, and that's a reasonable amount of improvements in the community, whether it's a neighborhood facility or a ward facility or something that draws citywide. You know, our sports facilities are in good shape and well-maintained. We have to we have a lot to offer both our residents and visitors to our community. You know, we have the Dixie World Series group of tournaments coming in this summer. So it's nice to have people from across the South come visit with us. Just any time we're able to draw people into the community. You know, our four states fairgrounds out there draws people in as well from across the country. So it's nice to have activities that bring people to us. And I think they enjoy their stay here. I think we've got good hotels, good restaurants, good attractions. So we're able to, you know, to entertain people while they're here as well. And I think that'll only continue to grow for us.
What did I leave out? What else would you like people to know?
Oh, I think when we think of community, I'd like to kind of give you my definition of that. And so I, because of the uniqueness of Texarkana, and when I say Texarkana, I mean both communities, the Arkansas and the Texas side. That uniqueness is different from a lot of communities in the country. And we've got some strong points there and some weak points. And so we've been able to work through some of our differences and come to some consolidations in some areas. And then in some areas we've gone separate, whether it's city and county, whether it's city and nonprofits, whomever it might be. We've got a number of things that, but I look at it very positively because we are all in this together. Community means everybody. And it takes local government. It takes business and the Chamber of Commerce. And it takes us individually and our nonprofits to make our community work. We all have to come together. You know, oftentimes we don't want to deal with local government sometime unless we need them for a service or need to ask them, what's the problem with your service? We need people to interact with us, to talk to their elected leaders, to tell us what they want, to be involved with us. It's part of our, to me, our civic duty to help support our community. And by community, I mean both communities.
Right.
And the services that we put on together. You know, the Bi-State Justice Center is one of those multi-agency locations, as well as TWU and our utility side. is one that serves both sides of our community. So these are all important pieces that it takes multiple people working to make it work. And it takes our citizens telling us where they are in that relationship and what they expect out of those services as well.
And I assume you're fully available. People can call you up at City Hall.
Oh, sure. They can call me at City Hall if they'd like to come spend some time with me. I'd be glad to have a cup of coffee or a glass of water with them and spend a little time, learn from them, because I'm still educating myself to the community and learning about our history as well as listening to what they think our future is.
Well, thanks for spending a little time with us here today. I really appreciate you spending a little of your morning with us.
My pleasure.
Take care.
All right.
On the Line is a Texarkana Gazette podcast recorded in our newsroom, Star Bear Studio, right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. The show was written, produced, and edited by Carl Richter. News stories are based on Gazette staff reports. Texarkana Gazette podcasts are made possible in part by a grant from the Google News Initiative Journalism Emergency Relief Fund. I'll see you next week on The Line.